Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
All right, pals.
And Ben Roy Turner.
I'm shocked we're doing a podcast. It's raining and Scott isn't snoring. What's going on?
I was snoring last week. Thanks to both you guys for filling in. It was a busy old time and I couldn't make it on. And I had too much Dodgeball Academia to play. And speaking of which, we thought we would do an early sort of roundup of where the general conversation is at on Game of the Year stuff. Because I feel like obviously 2021 has been a year addled by a lack of big attention pulling games. But that's not to say that there aren't worthwhile titles out there. You guys put together a preview of what's coming for the rest of the year last week. And we might touch on those sort of things in a bit, but I kind of just thought we'd have a conversation on where everybody's game of the year, what their nominations are, where they're sort of at in regards to like, oh my God, you need to play X from 2021. I know let's start with everybody's favorite game, a game that no one has anything to say against, which is Returnal. I was going to say Resident Evil 8. It's actually Returnal because Josh Brown, this has been your game of the year since you played it, since you reviewed it.
Really has. And at the time I knew it was a strong contender. I gave it in my review 4.5 stars out of 5, which if you've seen any of my other reviews before that, it's very rare that I give that high of a score. Mm-hmm. I think the only one that I've given that score before then was The Last of Us Part 2, which we won't talk about now. That was for last year's podcast.
Yes.
Returnal has just continued to impress me as the months have gone on, and Roy has been recently playing it as well, Royturnal as it's now known. And that just made me kind of want to buy another PlayStation, make another account, and play Returnal yet again and try to experience
it. You can't do this again. You've just put 70 hours into Death Stranding. Someone needs to say no.
That's why it can be done again. Yeah, I think this is just a spectacular game. And looking at the games yet to come for the rest of the year, I don't think there's one on there that's going to be strong enough to usurp it. I there's a lot of good games coming out, but it will be a big surprise for me personally if this isn't my game of the year come December when we're having these conversations more officially, because I just think
it'll be a big surprise to me personally if it makes my top 10. I was amazed that you guys loved it so much. Actually, Ben Roy, where you are on Returnal? Because I know you've played quite a bit of it. I know that obviously I'm not a massive fan of it. It is just too hard. I hate it. I hate its very soul, but it also hates me. So it doesn't really matter. It doesn't seem to like me at all. And so I've tried being friends with it. I tried extending the hand and shaking hands. It doesn't want it. So I don't want it either. Where are you?
I would say I love it. The thing is, we're having a bit of a break at the moment because there is John Carlos Espinito's going to be staying at mine for a bit. And big old Sam Wake, Alan Lake, whoever you want to call him these days, he's coming over as well. So we've got the boys over. And then Returnal's going to come back in November. But the weekend I put into it, I did 1 7-hour straight stint. I was like, how dare you think you're going to beat me this X part of this level? I was like, now I'm going to take you. I'm going to take you around behind the shed. I'm going to destroy you. And that just kept happening. So I'll just do a little bit more. And then how dare this game thinks it can beat me? And how dare it give me a bad spawn of mystical dragon boy? Like these monk things that could just teleport around and stab you in the back. I'm like, oh, God. Just there's so much bull crap in this game where you can just get one enemy's got hit. This enemy has a slap and that does all your health. And another one, it's just like, you just smash through them. And then sometimes it is just like the luck of the draw. I guess now I'm not going to get through it, but the next run, I'm just going to smash the game. And I kind of like that towards it. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I just like, whenever I get into a run and I'm getting into it and I'm just like, again, how I said, how dare this game think it can be difficult in 2021 when it's not happening. And now I'm going to teach it a lesson. I'm going to get a platinum and you're going to keep it down.
You can do anything. I think my whole side of it is that sort of RNG side of it where like it never really feels like I'm making any meaningful progress. It just kind of feels like I was doled out a better run. And then like at some point I'll just get completely murked because something on the other side of the map will shoot me or whatever it is. And I don't care that much about the story. I don't care that much about the characters or anything. And over time, the RNG side of it just has felt like it just flattened me over time where I was like, you know what? I don't care about your stupid mystery thing. It's just annoying.
It's funny, man. Excuse me. It's funny because like if you guys, you know, told me a year ago that my favorite game of 2021 would be a roguelike, I'd have said, interesting, now leave me alone, because I didn't like roguelikes that much at the time. And I had the exact same criticisms you've just leveled at Returnal for Hades, even though that was a game I really enjoyed. Was one of the best games of last year, definitely. I didn't enjoy it as much as other people seem to, partly because of that random element to it that I felt like some runs were wasted if I didn't get off to a good start. I never got that in Returnal, primarily because I think it has a few hard progression states as you go through its levels. For instance, if you jump through a portal to a biome, it already starts the weapons at a certain level, you know, level 5, yeah. level 10 and stuff. So it has those elements to it where even if I did get a bad hand, quote unquote, bad hand, and not the hand I wanted to, I never felt like I was impeded in a way. And I never felt like I had a 7-hour session lost. And the fact that I did those 7-hour sessions so aggressively and so passionately, you know, into the early hours of the morning, you know, I talked on podcasts at the time about how it made me break my bedtime rule because I just couldn't bring myself yes. away from it because I needed to finish those runs. Like the fact that a roguelike got to me in that way is just unfathomable for Josh of 1, even 2 years ago. Like I would never expected that to happen in a million years.
Past 10 p.m. Brown is a rarely seen beast. But yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing with Returnal. Because there's that kind of hard bit, like you said, there are points in the game where different things change like forever kind of thing. And there's like 6 biomes in total, I think. And once you get past half of them, you can then start from halfway into the overall progression. But I think it's just like a checkpoint thing. For me, it was just, I got past that halfway mark. I got all the way to what is the final biome. And then I finally died. And then I went all the way back to that midpoint again. And it was just too much. It was too much of a run. It was too much of a thing to lose. And it's what ultimately put me off Hades. And maybe is my personal subjective problem with roguelikes overall. The more story you build into a roguelike, the more annoyed and more annoyed I'm going to be that I'm losing progress in that story. Because like I said, that there is a mysterious hook to this. There is something with the main character where you want to know exactly what's going on. And the thing that you get served up at that halfway mark is really cool and does, for me at least, made me go like, oh God, fine, I do want to know. But that's always up against the reality of just how much it will slap you into the ground and hold you there and just kind of go like, well, do it all again then. And I'm just like, actually, no, I'd rather play 12 other things that are out right now. I don't want to let this game beat me because no other game has ever beaten me. Like I've never like given up altogether, like managed to get through Sekiro, all the Souls games, whatever it is. So it's I'm going to get there. I'm going to hate every second of doing it, but it's a thing.
No game's beat. It's not going to beat me either, I'm afraid. Like you wait when November comes around and this will be the only thing I'm talking about, unless for some reason I'm still stuck in GTA 3 or something. But yeah,
yes.
I think the reason why Returnal drew me in more than Hades is because just same compatibility is weird. It looks to me like a Prometheus game for one thing. And then it's also got like the goopy lion monsters out of Lived RP at one point. In that first early section. So it feels like that meshed together, and something about it being a shooter clicks on me more than anything else. My big, big problem is I wish you could just be like, give me one of every gun I've touched so far at the beginning at the basic level and just let me grab the assault rifle straight away. Don't give me shotguns. I don't want shotguns when everything gets so far. It's a dumb weapon to have, man, especially when things fly around, you can't get them. It's like, oh,
that thing, what's the, it's called the rot launcher or the glob launcher or something that like poison,
getting the bin launcher,
damage thing.
No. Well,
no, I've heard that that's like the way, but oh God.
That's it, man. Like that, like the one called like something, something driver. It's like an electric gun that you like link together. All of these guns start quite bad, but then you upgrade them. And then the best things since sliced bread, the Holoseeker, Benroy.
Oh, I love the Holoseeker. That thing's great.
Yeah. Yeah. That in the later biomes just absolutely wrecks every single Thule ever.
What does that do?
It's that big homing machine gun thing with like loads of
With a billion bullets.
Yeah. Yes, it's a big
LMG. I think I've used that. Yeah, I think I've used that.
When it gets upgraded, you get like homing bullets, so you barely even have to aim. It just sort of goes straight to them. You get like these extra things on the side, wrecks.
The thing with the game, because obviously it's always the case with roguelikes where they're going to batter you into a fine paste, but there is, if you stick with it, there's a slow cog that eventually turns and you get that feeling of progression, you get that feeling of reward. And I feel like the way that Returnal does it is it's weapon-specific upgrade things where you're banking different levels for the weapon so that next time you pick something up, you're picking up a level 5 weapon. You can have that, you know, later bio and power up earlier, and then you can move faster and keep going, and that's that overall cog that turns for Returnal. And I feel like that's the thing that is incredibly satisfying when it all starts to work. But you put up with a lot of stuff before that starts to happen.
Can I do my favorite humble brag every time we talk about this?
The fact that you did the whole game in one go, yeah.
More or less, is that in the review, when I was doing it, I was kind of stressed out. One of my big criticisms was that some of the progression didn't quite hit because, you know, Celine's there and she's like, we're at the end of Biome 3, and she's like, oh, it's been such a long, arduous journey. You know, we've died so many times. And I'm kind of there like, have we? I've died according to the clock.
This is what broke Hades as well.
I didn't get that connection to the character in the same way that I did in another game we might talk about later on, because the loop wasn't there for me in the early game, especially. It did creep in later on, but my kind of flex in this is that I was so good, such a pro gamer that didn't quite resonate with me.
Got a little t-shirt on pro gamer with an arrow that points up. Yes. That's you wearing that with honor. But I mean, this and Hades, you blitzed through to the point where you broke their stories. Where it's like there's supposed to be a level of struggle that you're just like, nah.
Crap at every other game, and I just apparently I'm good at these.
Don't worry about it. But yeah, I think like that's kind of the thing with Returnal, is this sort of clockwork mechanism of like perfected roguelike mechanics. But at the same time, like it took them a while to sort of settle on the version of the game they wanted the whole world to use. Like they went back and forward on the checkpoint side of it. They went back and forward on some of the drop rate stuff. And I feel like it's in a better state now than it was at launch. Obviously, like you said, you didn't really struggle with it anyway. But the version that me and Ben Roy are playing through now is tweaked a bit. Which is an interesting thing in regards to like, you know, like if you're the developers, how easy do you actually want people to get through this? Like at some point you're going to tweak the drop rates and let people get through. Because there was a time when the trophy data, the percentages were so small and hardly anybody was actually seeing that thing through. Another game though, that is, I think collectively, it's almost definitely going to be our game of the year is Resident Evil 8. And I've had all sorts of thoughts on this game, but I know that it's Ben Roy's game of the year by far. Mr. Ben Roy, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, it's weird because, in a way, I feel like almost Resident Evil 2 Remake is a better game than this in my brain. It probably is. But that wasn't my game of the year that year. But it just so happens, the hand we've been dealt this year, where it seems we're getting all the films we want to watch now, but all the games are kind of like, we'll see you next year, lad. But yeah, Resident Evil Village 8, the 8th village of Resident Evil, just for me, hit on so many points and didn't disappoint anything like... I was scared it was going to go open world at one point. I'm just like, get open world out of my life and let's get a bit more focused. We don't all need to have a massive world. Please, please, please. And it was condensed enough and it felt, and it being lazy, it felt enough like Resident Evil 4 and Resident Evil 7 came together, kissed and had a baby. And then we kind of got that game, but with like super graphics. This was my first sort of like, proper PlayStation 5 experience. I mean, I did play Hitman 3 on PS5, but I mean, that basically just felt like a prettier version of 2. Whereas just going into the castle, I mean, there are points in this game where it kind of like fails, I think, a bit. Well, like the castle section should be bigger, or you should be able to go back there. One of the last areas is a bit boring, even though Heisenberg's kind of interesting. And though it never really felt dangerous to me, because I'm going to do a Josh Brown here, playing on hard, I just was like, well, you know what? I can just shoot you in the face and I'm pretty good at that. So you can't get me. But then I wouldn't have been able to do Village of Nightmares or whatever the hardest of course without unlimited Magnum, because it takes what, like 50 or 60 shots to the final boss, I'm going to say. And just, yeah, for me, I could go on for this forever, but I'm just going to let it float now over to you, Scott.
Well, the thing is, the last few years, like especially with Resident Evil, I feel like Resident Evil 2 sort of reawakened that side of Resident Evil games where you're going through your unlock and stuff, you're replaying it, and it's like this liquid butter game where it's just perfect to play. It's perfectly like paced and you can just kind of burn through it. And Resident Evil 8 for me, like I'm not going to shy away from the fact I thought it was a cataclysmic letdown on the script front and the story front. But in terms of playing it, it was absolutely perfect. Like it was the first time this whole year where I just thought to myself, it was the bit about the halfway mark when you come out of the Silent Hill style level. There's a whole sort of level set in like a dollhouse type place,
yeah,
where it goes like full on corridor crawling horror. Which is like immaculately done. And it was after that when you sort of return to the open world stuff or the slightly more open world stuff, and you're just sort of hoovering up some crafting components, you're taking on some different, there's like a big mutant pig that comes after you at one point. And I was just kind of doing this stuff and I was in the world and I had my three shotguns because I like to hoard a few shotguns. I had all my different things.
You just reminded me of your inventory screen that you sent us.
We'll get there in a sec. But I had this moment where I was just like, I was revisiting the world. I was getting back out there after this sort of like serious, more closeted part of the game. And I just kind of had this feeling of like, this is so well done. Like, I wish that the stuff with Lady Dimitrescu was longer overall. And I think that I wish that they didn't go so banana sandwich ridiculous with the ending part of it. I think when as much fun as the big mech fight can be, ostensibly yeah, a big mech fight, that did lose me. And I also don't think that that much of it was very intense or scary necessarily. But there's a specific strand of camp that Resident Evil does better than anyone. And once you tie that in with really snappy arcade style gameplay and gunplay, that makes it so playable. And I feel like they played to their strengths. And I love how many risks they took with like the werewolves, like I said, and like the PT, the Silent Hill type stuff. And it does really come together. As much as I really think that its arse falls off towards the end. I was such a fan of everything until that back third. And yeah, I had all three shotguns because I don't know when I'm going to need to upgrade them. I have no idea. So I remember when I sent you guys the inventory screen and both of you were just like, why have you got three shotguns? Why wouldn't I have three shotguns? I ask you.
I turned around to my girlfriend during that moment and I said, he's got three shotguns. And she said, well, that means nothing to me. I don't know what you're on about. What's that mean? And I was like, this is insane. Trust me, this is crazy.
Why wouldn't you have three shotguns? It's a village surrounded by werewolf zombies. What if I need...
Three shotguns and no bullets.
What
three
if you take different ammo? No that I don't know, do I? No one told me.
No, Resident Evil shotguns have taken different ammo since the early days, man. Like, since 4. I could have planned you playing 4 and keeping every single gun there. And it's like, oh, my...
I kept all three. I just, it was something to do with like the fire rates or my assumption of fire rates.
It's one of those moments where I have to dip out just to Josh for a second and go, am I mad? Is he doing this for a laugh? And then go back in there like, no, he's just got three shotguns for some reason. I just don't understand why.
I knew that three shotguns was your button and I was going to push that exact button. But
that would have been that. But by the sounds of the troubles you were having, and then it was alleviated, thank God. Yes. But like, it sounded like that's probably why the trouble was there in some, not in the story.
Well, that was the final boss. That was like, I kept dying to the final boss. But my overall problem is the way that they write Chris and the hook and the marketing and the lies and all that kind of stuff. I think that's a whole separate thing to the gameplay.
For me, you just got to see it. Like Metal Gear, you've just got it's anime, isn't it? It's basically just anime for people that don't realize they like anime to a point. Where like Chris was punching boulders and now there's almost magic stuff at the end of that game. And like, I'm glad that the werewolves weren't magic werewolves and it was explained away as little as it was with
science. Way they could have done it, yeah.
Yeah, like just give me science and make sure it's a sciencey fiction thing more than magic. But for me, this is... Resident Evil, they're doubling down on like, we're not going to go back to the world of 6 just yet, so everyone can chill out. I'm like, now let's get the remake of 4 out of the way and hope Capcom don't go, wait a minute, what if we just all of a sudden went back into action?
Well, that's the thing, if they're revisiting the old ones, what if they start bringing in the strands that come from RE8 and then filter them back through and try and tie it all in together that way? But yeah, overall, tonally, I think it's like Metal Gear is a good comparison because I would say that Resident Evil 8 has Metal Gear Solid 5 level writing. As opposed to, it's not like I went in expecting something amazing, but even if you go across the Metal Gear series, 5 is notably more wacky, let's say, than the other stuff.
It was funny going through not all of the Resident Evils, but I went through Resident Evil 7, I went through Resident Evil 3 Remake, went through Code Veronica, went through a bunch of them. And then I was kind of like thinking in terms of Resident Evil script in particular, and I was like, nah, you know what? Like, we should expect more, perhaps, you know, especially from like the trailers and stuff. Maybe we should expect more from Resident Evil. But in terms of Resident Evil storytelling, I was like, 8 might be the Citizen Kane of this franchise. Oh. might be the best of the bunch. Because going off Code Veronica, especially, man, like, that game is fun. That game is a hell of a lot of fun.
It's
woof. The script in that game and the performances in that game, man, like they are.
It's not that they've not, you know, it's, Yeah, it's not that they've not had terrible moments before, but I think building a whole campaign around, oh my God, why is this happening? And then the explanation being so flat and terrible stood out to me. But I don't think it's a mark overall on recommending that game. Yes. Because there's way more recommendable qualities to it.
Can I just say that these games are like...
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I feel like I'm not trying to defend it. It's like it, for me, they're gameplay first and they're more lore centric than I would say story. Like, I'm well into the lore, right?
Yeah.
But like, at the same time, that it's more of a lore thing than a, like a well-crafted story. As I said earlier, like if this was like, say, like The Last of Us or another story game that I can't seem to think of right now, because there weren't really many out this
something
year.
Something more reputable.
Yeah, then I would be a bit more into it sort of that way. But when I know it's like they've probably thought level first and enemies first and then wove the story in there and what we've got in the past. And that sort of that grenade that I was waiting for Josh to jump onto called Resident Evil Code Veronica. And I knew, and I was waiting for these reactions as for a long time, man. When it finally got announced that he was playing, I was like, ha, 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 good.
You activated your trap card. I think, I mean, yeah, I just, as you know, for me, it's toddler level script writing for Resident Evil 8. I expected something and they had nothing at all. And it doesn't, it's not that it's not The Last of Us, but I just think that what they went with is like I think it's horrendous, but like,
there was a gut punch at the end, I feel like.
Yeah, like bits and pieces. I think this is a whole separate thing, because we did do the spoiler thing as well. But
yeah,
it's a hell of a game anyway. Overall, I think it's going to sweep.
One last thing. It would have been a lot better if one of the revelations they put in there, they also followed up within that game, and it's not ever going to be DLC or just forgotten about. You're like, wait a minute, is this happening? And then just, don't forget about that. That's like, what?
Well, there's that thing. We're dancing around for like the way that it ends, the sort of several bits and pieces that come from that and the different strands they potentially tease going forward. I think it's going to be telling what they do with that stuff going forward, whether or not it feels like 7, 8, and 9 is a more cohesive trilogy than maybe it feels like right now. But we will see. The other game that I've got down, at least towards the top of, you know, based on when we sort of put our initial rankings together before we were recording, is Hitman 3, which we can talk about quite quickly. It is just more Hitman, but at the same time, it is more of that meticulous, you know, clockwork level design with just some of the experts in sort of semi-open world gameplay putting together the best stealth game of in recent memory, really.
Totally. I think, you know, Hitman 3 and Hitman 2 and Hitman 1, you know, as a full package is just incredible value, like the amount you get from that. But for me personally, this sequel even though I really, really enjoyed Hitman 2, it just felt like a step up in terms of confidence and production values. Like, IO Interactive knows how to craft an engaging stealth sandbox where you can get creative, you can do whatever you want, you can follow the scripted assassinations if you want. But this time around, they did it with a level of polish and with a level of cinematic flourish that I don't think Hitman 2 had or even necessarily needed. But, you know, from the opening moments of Hitman 3, when you're on that huge skyscraper and that mint as all hell score comes in, and the visuals are awesome. You know, it looks great with ray tracing, it looks great in 60 frames per second on next-gen consoles. Like, the touches that they brought to that game in terms of the presentation just elevated it for me to a whole new level where I could just look at it and be like, this is gorgeous, you know, going to that Skyfall-esque level where you're in the big manor and like the moors or whatever, you know, like the artwork on that level is just incredible. Like, will stay with me when we're rounding up in December properly. I'll be remembering those images that it left ingrained in my brain. And it's almost like, it's weird because Hitman 3, you almost take the gameplay for granted because we know it's good. We know it's going to be excellent. And it is excellent here, that the only thing I can really comment on are those kind of slight new touches that it added in terms of the presentation, I suppose.
It's not to just be like have a big old moan cast, but I do think they dropped the ball in regards to what they set up in 2. And I don't think it's like super spoilery, but they do set up a massive reveal at the end of Hitman 2 in regards to 47 and Diana's history. And then they largely swipe that to the side and then just kind of crack on with the stuff they were going to do. And there's a character that's been built up across the rebooted Hitman and Hitman 2 that is just kind of cast aside so they can wrap stuff up a lot more neater than I feel like they were initially going to.
As you know, Scott Telford, in the only time in my life when I first played through Hitman 2, skipped the cutscenes because I didn't care about them that much. And I was obviously since went back and watched them.
Thanks for reminding me.
Yeah, but it was because I played the levels out of order. I played that as kind of like just something to dip into, whereas this time I actually played through it linearly for the first time and got the story. And I was like, sure, that's a story, all right. That is certainly a story with some bald dudes in it.
I would say again, Hitman is more of a lore game than a story game. But for me, for when the story actually properly, like, it kicked off in 2 and we like got some stuff in 1, and but the relationship
was so good.
The relationship I'm talking about, sorry, the original Hitman 2, not Hitman 2, new 2. But at the same time, I feel like it fitted because I feel like Diana and 47 are so professional in the way they're left off. And it's sort of like Diana, for me, I mean, it's been 20 years of these two characters pretty much being together, and I feel like she knew what 47 was like, so I could sort of see it go around there. The new character sort of like disappearing into dust, it's kind of like, is that it? But then at the same time, there's only room in these games, especially these, because these are level delivery systems, and there's only room for story between the level, between levels to not mess up too much so you can't just jump back in. So, I mean, poor Lucas, he could have had a better, like, sort of his story could have ended a better way. But at the same time, it just feels like I'm so happy for Hitman and 47 for IO. After 20 years, Hitman's finally getting it sort of like spotting this in the limelight, not only just from like fans as such, but the sales and everything else. And this is like helping them boost on upon to the new James Bond game they're doing. And it just felt like this is a nice sort of bow on 47's journey for a while. And after, we could have never had this game ever again if Square Enix were not dumb and gone like, "Now we're going to keep the Hitman license, and we're going to put it in, I don't know, Final Fantasy somewhere." It's going to be Cloud's going to be a little Cloud's going to get a Keyblade somehow, and then he's going to go and get smack 47 around the face, and then they're done.
To be honest. I would take it. I would take whatever they wanted to do with it. But at the same time, IO Interactive going independent with it was by far the best thing that they could have done. I think that when you go back to Blood Money as well, for as much as that was like the best Hitman at the time, it's very clear now that the current trilogy, especially, you know, if you just go with Hitman 3, you can plug in Hitman 2 and 1's different level packs. It is easily the best the Hitman's ever been. Like, it eclipses the old ones, even as much as we used to like Blood Money and stuff. But yeah, Hitman 3, another stellar offering. That actually came out way back in like January, which feels like a lifetime ago. The lockdown time distortion is real. Next game down is Deathloop. But again, not to be Mr. Moni Moanford, but I just, none of these games have rattled the old, well, they have rattled the cage, but I just don't, they're not my thing. But Deathloop though, you guys both love it.
I'm really excited because this is four games in a row now. Four Game of the Year contenders, lest we forget that you've gone. I'm not sure about this.
They're sort of by default Game of the Year contenders. Like I saw any app released this year as a Game of the Year contender. So it's, you know.
I will let Ben Roy take this first because obviously
he platinumed it almost in a review of it.
And I haven't actually heard what Ben Roy thinks of this since you finished it.
It's weird. Deathloop was a weird one where you start off and you get it. For me, it started off rocky and I was like, yep. Okay, what's going on here? And then when I realized kind of like to be reluctant and boiled down, okay, it's four maps and they slightly change a little bit like throughout the time. Okay, so now I've got that in that mechanical part of my head. What we're doing next. There's not so much of a point for me to walk around these maps after the first time going into them. Sorry, that's sacrilege to some people, but I feel like there isn't. And now I'm just, once I turn this into a purely mechanical experience with the funny quips coming at me every now and then between the two lead characters, I really sort of like got into it. And yeah, I just got into platinum mode. Like, well, I could just destroy this game. And I could also, when this game wasn't open to the public, because for some reason I got this delivered early, thank the gods, went in there and I destroyed several, which I guess were Twitch streamers or journalists, because that wasn't properly out. And it was so nice just leave my game open and wait for people to come in there and just teach them a lesson. Look, mate, you can't hang with me.
You got the poison bullets. You got the fart bullets.
Fart gas all over them. Farting all over them. They choke to death, and I take their stuff, and I carry on to victory. For me, this game was a joy to look at, and it was a joy to sort of get within the clockwork system. But after about a week, I don't think it would have stuck with me if I hadn't got a platinum.
My thing was just, I just can't get the gameplay loop in it. Like, I just can't. It's like you said, it's four levels. You dip in, you go over here, you read a document. Okay, now if you go to this place, you can shoot this guy, and you go do that, and then you do exactly that, and then you go somewhere else. And I don't get it. Like, I don't get what people love so much about it. I don't get the feeling. I don't get the Hitman style feeling that if I change one thing over here, it has this massive causal effect elsewhere. It just feels really... It feels like a whole bunch of smoke and mirrors, bells and whistles to hide the fact that you're doing very specific objectives on quite small, repetitive maps. Like, that's the thing that I can't shake. And it's not to say that it's terrible across the board. I love the presentation, the music, the characters, the script overall and the concept. But I have not seen the thing that makes it a masterpiece. Like, when I'm seeing people say it's 10 out of 10, all that kind of stuff, I don't see that at all. No part of the game has given me that at all. And so that's my side of it, where it just hasn't clicked with me whatsoever. But I know that's completely different to especially you, Josh.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one, because even I don't think it's a 10 out of 10 masterpiece. I think it's very good. I'd probably give it, if I had to score it on that scale, I'd probably give it like a really solid 8. You know, I really enjoyed my time with
so
it.
I
did enjoy the loop. Like, that was another game that I couldn't stop playing because it gave me this kind of kick up the backside to do one more run, to do one more day, to try this map out in this certain time, to follow this objective and kind of explore. I thought the world itself, for me, was incredibly interesting, and I like the variance of the maps, and I never actually got bored going around within them. However, I often wonder when it comes to arcane games, especially with the exception of Prey, that sometimes they're let down because of me, because of a failure of imagination on my part. You know, I was watching actually what you recommended to me, Ben Roy, the Noclip documentary on Prey, and the developers in there essentially were saying that, you know, sometimes we give the player so many options that we actually run the risk of, or it might be the Dishonored one, but it was definitely one of their games, that we run the risk of making them pick an optimum play style and just having them repeat it over and over again. Once you find the three abilities that are the most efficient, players will stick with them, and they kind of talked about the struggles of encouraging people to experiment. And I often feel like I'm one of those players who, once I figure out a good way to do something and I'm getting rewarded for doing that, I can't think in a different way. So I'm not using the toolbox to its maximum creative ability, and that's kind of the issue I have with Deathloop. But I do think it's more of an issue on me, because they do give me those encouragements, but I just often don't take them because I like what I like.
That feels like such a I'm going to use the word failing, but that feels like something that they should be doing, though. Like, a really good developer would force you into those mindsets and would encourage a level of experimentation that you get it in Hitman, you know, other games that have these sort of clockwork mechanism mentalities. I feel like you said in Deathloop, it's like I've had the same weapons, the same power-ups since they started working. Like, why would I change them? I know that they work, other than just the sheer level of, like, I'll change this power up for the sake of it, but you don't need to. You can just run up to a dude and shoot him in the face and then do the next objective again.
That's it. I mean, you certainly don't need to, but it's kind of like, you know, I have to give the developers credit because they know that it's not going to click in that way with everyone, but the people it does click with and the people who realize that, yeah, they don't need to, but they want to, that's when it becomes like a really special experience. It's kind of like with some role-playing games, like you don't need to role-play. You don't need to change things around. I fully understand what you're saying because like I said, I feel that too, but I feel like in terms of Deathloop, especially after seeing that documentary about how they made Prey, like I can see where they've tried to rectify it in limiting the amount of abilities. Like you only have four or so in this game, and it gives you a smaller pool, but it makes them more complex. You have more options to use them in the way that they tie the powers and the power-ups for those powers to specific characters. So you're encouraged to assassinate them again and again. But obviously the implication is that you should be trying to assassinate them in different ways rather than just repeating the same runs. So I think they definitely tried to, and I can see why people will just bounce off that. Like in a way, in some ways I did, in some ways I didn't. But yeah, it's always hard to gauge a game by that because it's like, how much should these games hold your hand? How much should they signpost this stuff when a huge part of the fun is experimenting and getting those eureka moments for yourself? Like you don't want those ruined. It's a difficult balance.
No, totally. I wish there was just some part of some level where I looked at a setup of NPCs or a boss or something and I went like, oh man, if I had this power, I could do this. Or like, oh man, if I had this weapon, I could do this. Because I feel like you see that in Deus Ex or you see that in Hitman. Or you see all these different ways that you could be playing. And I feel like Deathloop doesn't give you that. And maybe that's because I've done about 7 to 8 hours of it. I keep going back to it because I'm like, I must be missing something. And I feel like I'm quite far through it now because it is just a case of getting all of the 8 main targets to a certain point, then you get to kill all of them. But it's just, it's one of those things where, and I know this is full on moaning, but it just doesn't work for me at all. And it's kind of like annoying because I get that it's a massive deal, but it's not clicking with me whatsoever. But I still think it'll come up a lot towards the end of the year.
For me, there was either nothing fully all came together in a way. Like I did get into it like mechanically, but either the maps weren't substantial enough for me at some points, or like some of the AI is never really a challenge at all.
That too, the movement's really
and
weird.
The only place that is, I would say, difficult. I'm not saying games should be difficult, but the castle where everyone's wearing those masks, that's the only point where you're like, you can't just go around and go shooting like willy-nilly. You're gonna get done in. You might as well jump into the grinder. But for me, once I got the advanced needle gun, and is it a needle gun? Would you call it a needle gun?
It's like a salad gun thing.
Yeah, and then the rapier that shot and explodes around, and then I would just cycle out. Like if I had the invasion turned on, I'd fart gas gun on me just in case to fart on everyone. But yeah, once I sort of got my loadout, it was pretty much I'm sneaking around, I'm zipping up around the rooftops, I'm breaking necks as casually as I can. Mm-hmm. I'm also linking people together and then killing like say 10 people with one headshot, which is so satisfying. There's so much satisfying elements to this and so many great moments, but at the same time the squash was a bit watery, man. It needed a bit more.
Like,
it needed to be a bit stronger for me. Yeah.
Yeah. And that power up's in Dishonored 2. But like in Dishonored 2, if you launch someone, they all get launched, which I was looking forward to doing in this, but then it's not that.
I was a bit upset when this wasn't like a linear sort of first person shooter game in like are we 70s aesthetic or is it 60s? Is it a blend of both, I'd say? And going for that, I was a bit upset when there wasn't a proper full-on story game, but the end of it, I didn't come out disappointed. I just came out like, maybe if they didn't want to see them building some of that stuff, but I would rather see another Prey. Prey was just so perfect to me in the Arcane style, and I dipped in Dishonored so ever so slightly, but for me Prey is what I want from them, but I guess Prey doesn't sell, so it's moving on trying to do something different.
It is interesting because my favorite Arcane game is the first Dishonored. That was the one that I just played to death and nothing's clicked since then, but I've wanted that feeling to come back. I need to go back to the first Dishonored and see if I can rekindle what that was. Overall it feels like those four games are pretty much going to be the top ones that'll get bandied about for game of the year. To throw in some other ones, because we're out of time, but to throw in some other ones, would be Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart, Sable, The Medium, Forgotten City, 12 Minutes, Kena Bridge of Spirits, and obviously going forward very recently or very soon, there'll be Metroid Dread, Far Cry 6, and then moving into the end of the year, there'll be Halo Infinite, Call of Duty, Battlefield 2042. So there's quite a lot in there. I feel like this year has obviously struggled with something that a lot of us look at and go, oh my God, it's definitely that. But at the same time, that makes it more interesting because I feel like across the board, between us and every other outlet that will be doing it, it's going to be hard to call a game of the year, or it might be quite interesting. Or, you know, it could be like, I would love something like Sable to get it because I feel like that would be insane if that, if that gets it. But a lot of these games, because they are so solid or they are so multifaceted, any one of them could be game of the year, which in itself is quite fascinating.
Also, like Metal Gear, Mass Effect took up a massive part this year as well. And I'm just remembering that was a thing, even though it's not this year's game. So it's just so confusing. But I just want to know what Josh has to say before we press stop.
I was just going to say, like, all of those games you mentioned there, I mean, especially Battlefield for me, like I said before, I don't think Returnal is going to be pushed off the top spot. But in terms of my personal list, anything's fair game for second, third, fourth, fifth, on to 10, up to 20. You know what I mean? Like, all of those could change within the space of a month, within the space of maybe even 4 days by the time Far Cry and everything comes out on that day. So well, it's an exciting final quarter.
Yeah, going off the flighting as well, like, I don't have an all-out game of the year. Like, I'm defaulting to Resident Evil 8 in terms of how I felt when I was playing it. In terms of what I've played the most of, it would be Dodgeball Academia. And then overall, I think it'll end up being Halo Infinite because that game is so solid. Providing the campaign isn't on fire, I think it'll be that. But that'll just be something to wait for the rest of the year. But for now, though, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Benroy Turner.
The rain has started again. Time to sleep.
And Josh Brown.
Goodbye.
And we'll catch you all next time. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Night.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.